Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Mac Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Mac Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Mac Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Mac. I've got the
power! Let's do a live radio broadcast. Good afternoon, everybody, and I mean everybody, everywhere, all around the world. Hey, gang, I'm Mac Newton, and this is the Power Hour, coming at you on a beautiful 73 degrees. This is the Power Hour. I think I'm just going to take a nap. Hi, gang. I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour coming at you from beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona, where it is a balmy 76 degrees. Feels like summer's coming back, Magic Man.
Yeah, I mean, I got my AC going and everything. Yeah. In the car. It is, you know, completely like summertime. I'm sure all the bowl game visitors were, you know, pretty upset.
Yeah, they're out of town. Finally got back to snowy Atlanta and Georgia and Alabama and wherever they're from, where it's snowing, which is unusual for this time of the year. But not here in Phoenix, Arizona. Beautiful day downtown here. Welcome aboard, gang. And I want to say welcome to a time of the year when a lot of people are feeling a little bit of a malaise. You know, the holidays are over and we're getting into a, it's an extended period where it's just represented by a lot of work. Looking at us, getting ready for another great year. You know what? So many comments, and the Magic Man was just loved listening to the music provided by Turning Point last week. We're bringing him back for an encore. In fact, I'm working right now to get the lead, the guitarist we're listening to right now, Thanos Anas, on as one of our guests, maybe as soon as next week. So Turning Point, our musical guest here on the Power Hour on Wednesday, January 19th. It's now exactly 4 minutes past the hour of five, Wednesday, January 19th. Beautiful day out there today, Magic Man. Just gorgeous, sunny and balmy. And I had the car wash this morning. And, you know, I'm looking at the camera and watching the little peewees out there exercising and working out with my black belt, Andrew T. there. All right, gang, for all of you guys who have not been online yet to check out our online workouts, they are there. So get online, check them out, fill out, register, get your account, and so you're ready to order your workouts when it's appropriate. We got a great show on tap for you guys today. I'm stoked about it. This is, I'm going to call this our belated MLK Day show. As you know, the Martin Luther King holiday was Monday, day before yesterday. But we're going to have our tribute show today. And so in addition to our early segment talking about the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King, and our main topic will be continuation, as we said, step seven, more information to you on that. And hopefully maybe even more to step eight or nine. I know we went through seven, eight, nine, and ten last week. We're simply going to expound on that so that we know how to do that and get more out of it. But as usual, at this point in time, as we hear the Turning Point fade out in the background, it's time for our shout outs. Yeah, gang, it's time for our shout-outs. And you know, it was really something because I was I actually did a post on Facebook the other day, and I started it out by saying, "Hey, gang." And John Cannon from up in San Francisco logged on and says, "Mac Daddy, it's so unusual to see the words, hey, gang, in print." Well, you know, John Cannon was, when he was doing the show called John Cannon Loose on the Deuce in Tempe on KDUX in Tempe, always, every time he came back from a break, he'd go, "Hey, gang." And I used to be up with him every Tuesday to do the Power Hour, or the Power Hour was 5 minutes or 10 minutes back in those days before we went on TV with it. And I guess sort of as a sort of a tribute to John, to JC, I always called him. And it sort of became my habit, but it all started with JC being loose on the deuce. Hey, gang. So I think we're going to see the fabulous Natasha, in case you're waiting for her introduction. She's running a little late today. She had a special real estate class, but I think I may see her pulling up right now. As soon as she gets into the studio, I'll let you know. Okay. But anyway, time for our shout outs. Andy there in Spain, what's up? Have you been online to check out the workouts? How about you, Al, down in South FLA? I know you had a question for me. Let's get rolling. Larry and Kimmy right here in the valley. Veronica G in the Philippines. I know you're looking good and she's all shapely, but we got a workout for you too, darling. Peter and the Bevzilla. DZ up in Michigan. I know DZ is already getting started. I think he was the very first to fill out his account and get rolling online. Barry and all the Taekwondo crew in Chicago, Barry and Jeff. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they deserve all that. And Nick is celebrating, I think, today. It was either today or yesterday, his 29th anniversary as a Taekwondo student of mine. Can you imagine? 20 years. Now he's running his own Nick's Pro Fitness in Evergreen, Colorado. So you want to find out all about Nick, just log on to Nick's. That's N-I-C-K apostrophe S, Nick's Pro Fitness, P-R-O, Pro Fitness in Evergreen, Colorado. And you'll find out a lot about him. He's unbelievably good. In fact, he came down just to do the advanced workout for our online workouts. So you'll be amazed at his flexibility and overall strength of what he was able to do in showing and leading all of the ones that decide to work out at the advanced level. No joke there. All right. Okay. I think that's it for, in fact, Lord, and I want to send a shout out to Nick and all of my extended family there in Colorado. I know it's been over a year since I've been there to do a seminar. Usually we do one there every year or so. But that just kind of backs up some of the success of this last year. We've been so busy working with our online workouts and other goals that we've had. And we had a tremendous year in 2010. It was just a tremendous year. And 2011 has just picked up right where 2010 left off at. I sure hope you guys feel the same way. I kind of got ahead of myself there. I gave my update all along. I kind of gave you the update before we actually did the shout outs, but that's okay. Hey, it's my show. I can do what I want to do. But the online workouts are there ready for you guys to take part in. I'll tell you something about them. It's easy. The pricing is simple. You can work out, let's see, for $19. It's $19 class if you just buy one at a time. If you buy three, you can do it for like $38, $39. So what a deal. Buy three. Try it one time. See if it works for you. Then buy it by threes. It works out. Even if you buy one, it's good for 24 hours. So if you, let's say you bought it today at 6. You work out right at 6. It takes about an hour, 50 minutes to an hour, the whole class. And then you can, right before it expires tomorrow, at the 11th hour, we'll do it again. So you get two for the $19. And then you know which one you want, you can buy them in sets of three. They work out better for you. If you're not sure which level, because when you log on, you'll get an introduction from me, and then you'll be invited to select the workout. if you really, even if after you listen to the descriptions or read them yourself, you can't decide, fill out the questionnaire. Send it to me. Let me choose it for you. And that's exactly right. It's not the computer doing it. It actually comes to my desk right here. And then I will read the information you provide me with and shoot out an email back to you, which will tell you how to use it, how frequently to use it, and when you ought to be ready for your next level. Okay, that's how the online workouts work. And they're off to a good start, too. In fact, a little bit faster than I thought they would. I'm looking for a good long-term arrangement here. We're going to be making changes and love your feedback. So go online, check it out. Let me know what you think. Okay, for my early segment today, you know, it's after all these years, gang, I still have a hard time understanding and getting my head around the courage that it took for Dr. Martin Luther King and so many others that work with him. Just the courage to stand in the face of arrest, to stand in the face of high pressure water hoses, attack dogs, threats in the media, death threats, people spitting on you, the anger, the curses. What kind of courage did that take? Day after day of being arrested and being despised by so many. I mean, you can even say that they put their lives on the line. When you say that these civil rights workers were actively involved in the fight for civil rights, that's no joke. It was a fight. The only question was, were they going to win? Because Dr. King, he said that the goal of this fight was to achieve equality and peace and love between the races. And that was the means by which he was going to achieve the goal. It's one of those things I just can't get my head around. Even though I lived through it. The reason I say it's hard for me to understand, gang, is that I remember a day in late 1962, early 63, perhaps. I was in Fort Benning, Georgia, just finished jump school, or was in jump school. Don't hold me to it, not sure. 62. It was a Saturday afternoon. A friend of mine from Philadelphia, we were strolling downtown Columbus, Georgia. We were going to take in a movie. And we walked up to the movie theater. And the young man in the ticket booth, just sort of stared at us. And I remember saying, two tickets. I don't remember the name of the theater, but I think it was something with Steve McQueen. I think it was something there. I couldn't be sure. But we wanted to see this movie. And so we went downtown Columbus, and we're standing there at the ticket booth, and he just stared at us, and I thought maybe he didn't hear me. And so I said, again, we want two tickets. And he didn't say a word. He just pointed at a sign. He pointed at a sign that was, it said, whites only. And even though I can read two-word instructions pretty well, I couldn't get my head around it. It was like, all of a sudden, whites only? I didn't understand what he meant. You see, I come from Jamaica. I'd gone from there to Inglewood, California, and Chicago. I don't know. I never experienced it before. I was shocked. I was in a state of shock. And as we stood there with our mouths open, he said something. You can come back during the week and sit in the balcony. Can you believe that? I could come back during the week and sit in the balcony. Wow. So we started walking down the street and we were walking the wrong way. So we turned around and started walking the other way. And I was on the outside, that street side of the sidewalk. And we were just in shock. And at that time, a white step side pickup pulled up alongside of us. And there were a bunch of white teenagers. And they were just kind of cruising right at the same speed we were walking, spitting at us. Their faces were just showed they had so much hatred, calling me names. And I'm thinking, I don't even know you. And it was really scary. It was incredible. I never faced anything like that before. All because my skin was black. Well, it was really amazing. Well, I mean, it's welcome to the USA. I remember thinking, I don't want this place. I want out of here. I can't live here. This is ridiculous. I'm sure that stayed with me for a long time. I remember even after I got back from the service being turned down for several apartments that I wanted to rent in Chicago and even for a job. And then this man showed up, Dr. Martin Luther King, who was willing to stand in the face of all of that. Stand in the face of all that anger. I mean, I didn't even understand why these people hated me so badly and wanted me. They wanted me dead. They wanted me gone. I didn't get it. None of it seemed to frighten Dr. King. Reverend Abernathy. So many others, not just black folks, but white folks, all driven. Oh, I know today how they were able to do it. Because when you have a vision, a goal, you see, that vision and that goal gives you a picture and it erases doubt and fear. You see, because his desire was bigger than the fear. His desire for a different world, a world of equality and justice for all, and blacks and whites living together, truly all children of God, overrode his fear. It made his doubt invalid. He had no doubt. No question. So in order to honor that legacy, I've, for a long time, I continue to dream big, and I imagine as if I have no limitations. And I do what's right, not just what I think is possible. That's the best way I can honor Dr. King's legacy. After all these years, it's still amazing to me. And I guess for those younger than me, it may be harder for you to understand. But even the behavior of those kids in the white pickup truck, and even as I remember the face of that young man inside of the ticket booth, none of it really got to my heart. Because as I listened to Dr. King, he says, you don't deal with negativity with more negativity. You don't deal with hate by hating. You deal with hate with love. With a consistent approach. We're not going to go away. We have a right. Our right is all the same to be here. Wow. I blogged about that yesterday, and one of the people who commented, a lady's, I guess it was a young boy, who was, I guess, a mixed kid, black and white together. And he said, I'm really thankful for Dr. King, because if it wasn't for Dr. King, my mom and dad couldn't have gotten married. And I guess if it wasn't for Dr. King, I wouldn't be here. Oh, wow. I guess from the mouths of babes. Yeah, you're right. Not that way. There's no question Dr. King changed the world. But it's the manner in which he did it that stands out. He fought without guns and sticks and stones and knives. He went toe-to-toe. Face-to-face with anger and bitterness and hatred and vitriol. He stood up right there, never looking down. He was arrested and handcuffed and called names by the police officers and walked into churches and stood with the parents of children who had died with bombs blowing up their churches. He had walked with them and held their hands. That's what that day means for me. The true appreciation of a great life fully actualized that continues to inspire me every day. Somehow I wish that every young person of color or not could feel that same vision of oneness for us and what a nation we can be. The time we spend making ourselves separate, focusing on the differences between us. Sad. And it's sad to think that this country, America, built on equality for all, is capable of such. Anyway, gang, I choose to honor that legacy by fulfilling my life and helping as many others as I can fulfill theirs. Like Dr. King too, I don't know if it will be in my lifetime, but at one time it will be a raceless society. There will be one face for all of us. At some point. But you know, I don't think that the fact that we have different races should be an issue. It's the differences that creates the forests, the different trees and plants and animals can all live together. Why can't we? That's what Dr. King said. He said, I have been to the mountaintop. And I have seen the day when all people, black people and white people, will live together in peace. Then he said, free at last, free at last. We're a little late in our tribute. The day before yesterday was Martin Luther King Day, but does it really matter? Does it really? So I encourage you, pursue your dreams, but do it big. There's boldness. There's magic in boldness. Set them big. And then the spirit of Dr. King will support you too. My name is Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. The fabulous Natasha is sitting in her normal seat, sitting there looking beautiful as ever. And of course, the magic man is making everything happen. It is now, gang, just at the bottom of the hour. You guys stay exactly where you are. We'll be right back. This is Turning Point, taking us to break. See you on the other side.
This is Zach Geist, also known as the Magic Man. The Power Hour is brought to you by Newton Fitness Online, the same high conditioning and training that Mac Newton provides in his beautiful Central Phoenix, Arizona location is now available to you online, 24 hours a day. It couldn't be easier. Just log on to MacNewton.com and go to Mac's gym. Yep, his gym is online now. Just go and select your fitness level and go to class. Okay, don't put it off. Go to MacNewton.com now, check it out, and get in the best shape of your life.
Hey gang, welcome back. I'm Mac Newton, this is the Power Hour. Let's welcome the fabulous Natasha in for the last half of the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you too.
That's a nice necklace you're wearing. Is that one that you've made too, by the way?
Yes, the necklace made by me.
What exactly is that, Natasha?
My design.
What is it? What kind of stones are those?
I think they're glass stones. Oh. They're not particular stones, but I like the color of it. It's matching my shirt.
Yeah,
right?
It is. I immediately caught my attention. Did you notice that magic man over there?
She's, you know, always stylish.
Always stylish.
Thank you.
We do what we can here, you know, being as it is a radio show.
As it is, but a live radio broadcast, I might add. And I mean, we all know that Natasha's got many, many talents. She's a great singer, and, you know, she's into real estate these days. But, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned in the past, she designs and makes jewelry. So we may be offering some of that in our online store that we have here at Newton Fitness in the future. So, well, she's very, very talented.
Thank you.
Talented lady. So glad you can make it, darling.
Oh,
glad to see you here.
You.
All right. Okay, a little bit more of that turning point in the background. And bring it over. Let's hear a little bit more of that. Here's my man, Thano Sanas, on guitar. Taught me my very first E chord. There you go. But you know what? I pass it on. Taught it to you. That's right. Okay. All right. Turning point. Thano, Dimitri, John, and Michael. This was from their very first album called Turning Point. All right, check it out. I'm sure you'll like it. Okay, the game we're going to, you know, last week we really got it detailed on step 7, 8, 9, and 10. Okay, we told you exactly how to make that work for you. What step would step number 7, step number 8, step number 9? How to, step number 7, of course, is to identify all of the
obstacles.
Thank you. All the obstacles that you are going to encounter as you accomplish your goal. I established that in the beginning. Make a list of all the obstacles that stand between you and the accomplishment of your goal. Now, I told you that I was going to come back to step 7 to give you more information. And now I am. See, most people, when I give them that instruction and they list every obstacle that they can think of, usually they write down physical or external obstacles. And even though I can say these obstacles can be internal and external, okay? All right. We discussed a lot of what is your big rock? And we got to take care of those first. But I want to tell you about two obstacles today that must be considered as you make this list. I remember reading a book by Dr. Martin Siegelman. And he was an instructor, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania for many years. He's a researcher as well as an instructor. And he wrote a book called Learned Optimism. I've talked about it more here on Power Hour. Learned Optimism. And in the reading of that book, I learned another phenomenon that he didn't necessarily describe, but I interpret that some people, by living and having people as they go older, as they listen to people tell them what they can and cannot do, there's a phenomenon that I called learned helplessness. I think that a majority of our population suffers from learned helplessness to some degree, and some to a very high degree. Now what this means is that people who suffer from this learned helplessness feel that they're incapable of achieving their goals or improving their lives. I mean, the most common manifestation of learned helplessness is I can't. You know, I can't. Whenever victims of learned helplessness are offered an opportunity or a possibility or a new goal, they immediately respond by saying, I can't. And then they'll go on the list all the reasons why a particular goal or an objective is not possible for them. I'll give you a perfect example, Natasha. Give you a perfect example. Now, you know, a month or so ago, I went through a complete examination, physical exam at the Mayo Clinic here in town.
Yes.
I was looking to make, because I have specific goals for this year and beyond, and I want to make sure that I'm capable of setting these goals. So I went through several meetings with very learned doctors and experts in their field. Internal medicine, orthopedics, neurologists. One after the other, with specific questions I had for them. And each and every one of them, at one point or another, after listening to why I was there and what I wanted to do, said to me, in one way or another, said to me, Mr. Newton, you are aware that you're 65 years of age and that you may have to lower your expectations a bit. You may not be able to continue to do the things you're doing. Then they would go on to say, you know, you're very fortunate to be able to do what you can do today. I mean, you're performing at a higher level than most your age and some much younger than you. It's very impressive what you can do. And so finally, after I listened to this, to one I said, how do you think I got here? How do you think I got to this point by playing it safe and listening to what you and people like you think I should do at this particular age? In other words, this is the way society teaches you learned helplessness. So we know that at 40, I've seen people change from one day to the next, going from 39 to 40. All of a sudden, going from I can do something to I'm 40, I'm helpless. They were teaching me to be helpless. How do you think I got to this point? By accepting helplessness or challenging my possibilities? By dreaming, and remember, as I said when I was talking about Dr. King, your dream, your vision, your desire destroys fear and doubt. And you're able to move on. You're able to stand in the face of tremendous opposition and stand straight and tall without blinking. Vision gives you this. Dreams give you this. You know what he said? Absolutely nothing. He had nothing to say. I said, thanks for your time. It's been a blast. The I can't. People say, I can't save money. I have too many bills. See, you got the explanation right after the I can't. See, right as soon as people who suffer from this learned helplessness, they'll tell you what they can't do and then they'll tell you why. Justify, making sure you understand it's not their fault. I can't lose this weight. I don't have time to work out. I don't belong to a gym. I can't afford it. I can't, and here's my reason. I can't get a better job because I don't have enough education. There's what I can't do. Here's a reason. Okay. It's constant. Oh, I hear it every day. I can't start my own business. I don't have contacts. I can't improve my relationships. I work too much. Learned helplessness contained in the words, I can't. I can't. Whatever it is, there's always this self-limiting reason that as soon as they give you the I can't, they immediately give you the reason, and then just as immediately that reason slams on the brakes of your potential. Whether you could do it or whether you couldn't doesn't matter at this point in time. It short circuits any attempt to set a new goal. It blows up your desire. So now without desire, you don't have a goal. But you think you set one, don't you? So you think you've met the obligatory, oh, Mac Daddy, I set a goal. Yeah, I said it. I followed what you did. Only thing was, I didn't have the time to join the gym. I didn't have the money. I couldn't get a raise. Okay. Were you really listening to me, or were you spending your time coming up with reasons why what I said didn't make sense? Okay. My name is Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. We do this every single Wednesday at 5 o'clock. If you want to send a comment to me, send it at 7. The number 7 spelled out, S-E-V-E-N at MacNewton.com. Join in the conversation. You know what we're trying to work on? Hopefully this year we'll be able to get into taking some phone calls. I'd love to do that. Take some phone calls from you guys around the world. Anyway, let's get back to number 7 and some obstacles that we must consider. Learned helplessness that can affect, in my opinion, as much as 80 to 90% of our population to varying degrees. Some people are completely controlled by learned helplessness and they feel they can't do anything. Then some people feel they can do some things, but not others. I can do this, but I can't do that. Whatever it is, as I said, whatever it is, the self-limiting reason for your learned helplessness short circuits any attempt to set a new goal or to change things in any way. I remember a famous observation by Henry Ford, and I probably won't quote it exactly, but it went something like this. If you believe you can do a thing, or you believe you can't, in either case, you're right. If you believe you can do it, you're right. If you believe you can't, you're right. So every time you say, you're right. I mean, every time you say, I can't, you're right. You're not going to be proven wrong in that case. You're never going to, I thought I couldn't do it, but gee whiz, I did it. No. You'll only find that out when someone else pushes you. Someone else pushes you. I do it all the time here. That's why people come here. Because they know I'm going to take them out of the number two reason, that the number two mental obstacle. I'm going to take them out of their comfort zone. See, the comfort zone has a sort of a soft, lovable name. Comfort zone. Oh, I'm in my comfort zone. Hold on. I'm in my comfort zone right now.
It's like a Snuggie, sir.
Yeah, it is. It's like a zebra stripe Snuggie. I'm going to put on my zebra stripe pink Snuggie and get into a comfort zone and ease on into a deeper comfort zone. Okay. Right. The Snuggie Bear over here. Thanks for reminding us about that, Magic Man. Yeah. Now, how do you unlearn learned helplessness? Anything you can learn, obviously, you can unlearn it. First thing you need is the awareness, like I'm trying to give you right now. Now, see, I've made a lifetime, and I continue to, of researching and learning, finding out the things that stand between us and what we want. But as I observe people and I observe their strengths, and I wonder, what can I do to do that? And what will my getting that do for me? How will it improve my life? I never think I can't do that, because if someone else can do it, I can do. Anything anyone else can do, put it this way. Let me just change that so that I don't set up a whole series of arguments for people. Ask yourself this question. Has anyone else with my perceived limitations been able to do what I want to do? With my perceived limitations. What's your answer? Answer is yes. Then you can do. Then you can do. Now, usually learned helplessness is caused when we listen to negative conversation from spouses, siblings, bosses, friends. And sometimes it starts in early childhood by destructive criticism or physical punishment. Sometimes negative experiences growing up that are not challenged. Sometimes failures as an adult. where the adult looked at that failure as an indication that they were incapable of doing it, or they were not supposed to have what they were going after, and they never challenged that failure. They didn't look at the failure as an indicator of something they needed to learn. That's how it's usually learned. The way you get over this tendency to sell yourself short is by setting small goals, really small goals, making plans and working on them day by day. I've got a wonderful lady in my class. I'll call her Jan. I'll call her Jan because that's her name. Jan is, I would say, a very attractive lady in her 50s, I would guess, maybe her early 50s. But when she came to me, she had not worked out maybe ever, or in a real, real long time. She was overweight. She had very little muscle tone, very little lean muscle mass. She didn't have enough blood volume. Her circulation was poor. Skin tone was terrible. She was very weak. She had trouble walking. She had no stamina whatsoever, none, zero. So as she started, she came to me at the end of this one little, I think it was like a little seminar I did for her work group. She came to me and she whispered in my ear, almost with tears in her eyes, she says, "I want to get my body back." And I says, "If you want it, you know exactly where I am." It wasn't more than a week later, she came back in to see me. Well, we got started. And she's done exactly as I asked her to do. Well, one day, at first when she first started, all she could do was stretch a little bit, just a little bit of bending and reaching, not a lot of real stretching. And I'd put her on a bicycle at a very low level, just a pedal. And every once in a while, I might bring her off to do a little stomach crunch. Not much. Just a little bit. Controlling her progress, slowly but surely. And then one day, I took her off. Right in the middle of it, I said, "Go over to that far wall and run a suicide." A suicide is running to one mark, bending down, touching it with one hand, running back to the wall, and running to another mark further down the floor, touching it, running back to the wall. And you're doing this about five different marks. And it's very challenging. And I usually do it with the right and the left hand. She looked at me when I told her this. She was like, "Go do it." It's not something she would have ever done on her own. "Go do it." I didn't ask her. "Go do it." I already knew she could do it. Well, she ran first. I said, "That's enough. Go get back on the bike." Now, you know what I'd done? I'd given her a little success that builds confidence, builds courage, and diminishes fear and doubt. And that's how you overcome it, with little baby steps. You set little goals. This is how you do it, is you set small goals. You make plans and you work on them each day. And in this way, you gradually develop courage, confidence, like building up muscle. And as you become more confident in yourself and in your abilities, and now you can set even larger goals. And over time, your doubts and fears weaken. Why? Because your courage and confidence grows. And you become the dominant person who cannot fail. You become a force of nature who will be behind you, and you're unstoppable. Now, is this making any sense, Natasha?
It makes perfect sense.
These are two ways. We're still working in number seven. So if you're making your list, and in fact, if you made your list last week, you're going to have to take this information and go back and make it again. And I guarantee you're going to have different obstacles. And that's a good thing, because that tells you about you. This is a journey into self-discovery. And the more you know about you, the more confidence and courage you have, the less doubt and fear you have. So you might say, "Mac, why are you teaching me like this?" I'm teaching you this way so you can find some of your own answers. Self-discovery. Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. My eyes just went over to the screen, and I saw the little peewees out there on the floor. It was just great to watch them. They're so, you know, the reason I teach peewee class? Because they inspire me. They're just young things full of potential and possibility, and their eyes look at you like, "What's next, sir? What's next, sir? What's next? I can do it. I can do it. What's next?" Okay. 8 minutes before the hours, gang. You just hang in there. If we have to run out like the building's on fire, that's okay. The second mental obstacle that you need to overcome, I mentioned earlier, it's a comfort zone. Yep. The snuggy zone. the comfort zone. Basically, what that means is complacency. People who become complacent with their current situations, they become complacent. They become so comfortable in a particular job or relationship or a particular salary level or responsibility that they become reluctant to make any changes at all, even for the better. That's why in the military, they rarely let military officers stay in one location longer than 3 years. Why? Complacency. They don't want them to start taking things for granted. It's a major destroyer of relationships. I don't know this for a fact, but just from my being on the planet a long time and having talked to a lot of people, and people for some reason have a tendency to share things with me because I'm a good listener, I can tell you right now, people taking their spouses and their relationships for granted is a major reason that relationships fail or weaken. Not changes. People say, whoa, is the change? No, no, no. She takes me for granted. He doesn't appreciate me. And you know what? In every case, they're right. They're absolutely right. The comfort zone is a major problem. It's a major obstacle to success in any area. Because when you get a good salary, it's a major problem. Companies, major companies like IBM and Hilton Hotels hire me. Electronic companies are all around the country. Hire me to come and talk to them so that I can inspire their middle-level managers to aspire to upper management. Because they get into this, they got a good salary, they're doing well, and they enter into the comfort zone. The comfort zone is to be avoided at all costs. We have to be comfortable being a little uncomfortable. We've always got to be working on a goal to make things better. Things are going great. Let's make it better. People say, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Come on. Don't give me that tired, worn out old cliche. Come on. All winners know you ain't got to be sick to get better. All winners know that. All winners are always thinking. You don't wait till it's broke to fix it. Because when it broke, you know what it is? It's broke. You're dead in the water, man. You're stopped. You got to start all over again. You got to fix it and then get going again. But if you fix it before it's broken, you keep making it better. Okay? You make it better and better and better. And that's the best way to go about it. All right. It's a major obstacle. I mean, I'm talking about the comfort zone still, gang. It's a major obstacle to ambition. The number one step in all of our 12 steps. What is that? Cuddly? I mean, snuggy bear? I'm serious. Magic man. What's the number one step in all of the 12 steps? Number one is?
Identify or set the goal.
Give it to me. Natasha, number one is? The number one thing is, you got to have it, is desire. Number one is desire. Number two is belief. So the comfort zone blows up desire. The comfort zone is a major obstacle to your ambition. It's a major obstacle to your determination. It's a major obstacle to your accomplishment. People who get stuck in a comfort zone, if it's combined with learned helplessness, are almost impossible to help no matter what you do for them. No matter what. Don't let this happen to you. Okay. The best way you can get out of your comfort zone and break loose from learned helplessness is by setting big, challenging goals. As I said earlier, there's magic. There's magic in boldness. Magic in boldness. And that's what I said as my tribute to Dr. King. The tribute to Dr. King is I'm going to set big, challenging goals. I'm going to set them and let them propel me. And let their magic change my life. I wrote today, for those of you who are maybe my friends on Facebook, I said something to this effect. Never waste your time worrying about what's going to happen in the future. You already know what's going to happen in the future. It depends upon the goals you set. If you don't set any goals, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You can just kind of hope and wish. The only way to deal with the future is to set goals and deal with the, and the only way to deal with the with the future is to always operate very effectively in the present by setting goals. I sometimes kid that I'm the pastor of the church of what's happening now. You know what? Yeah. The church of what's happening now. Why? Because there's no pressure in the present moment. Pressure only comes from living in the past and being upset at things that can't be changed. Or anxiety coming from our over-concern with the future. You must be in the present to win. And what I mean win, W-I-N, I mean doing what's important now. Okay. Couple more points with you on number seven. Number one, desire. We know that. I don't want you to just have smart notes, gang. I want you to be able to know this stuff. Number one is desire. Number two is decision. I'm sorry, belief. You got to believe. You got to believe in two ways, that you deserve it and that you've got what it takes to get it. Number three, write it down. Write it down. Number four, make a list of all the ways you're going to benefit from having it. Make a list. Number six, set a deadline. Number seven, we just talked about it, is to identify all the obstacles that you're going to face. Number eight and nine, I talked about those last week. We're going to get back to number eight again next week to expand upon it as we did. Number seven. Number eight is to identify additional knowledge and information you may need. Number nine, identify the people, organizations, or groups who can help you. We'll deal with that the following week. Number 10, how do we make a plan out of all of this information contained in 7, 8, and 9? And then we'll get into number 10 and 11, which will take us over the horizon. As Dr. King said, set yourself free. Set yourself free. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our show. Okay. It's about 1 minute before the hour. And as we usually do when we get out of here, I always say, be true to yourselves. What do I mean by that? I mean, let your words and your behaviors match. We have a word for that. Our word of the year is integrity. Your words matches your behavior. Your thoughts matches your actions. And also be good to those close to you. Be good to the ones you love. Don't just save your best behavior for strangers. All right? And as usual, we also want to give, always be thankful. I think an attitude of gratitude is always something that's good for us to have. Bob Adlock. Hey, the Suns are starting to come back last couple days, win a couple games, you know? Snuggy Bear, you know, give us a couple of them. Pat McMahon, my mentor. JC, the guy who came up with the, hey, gang. JB, we still miss you, brother, and always will. You still inspire us. We won't forget you. And, of course, the fabulous Natasha, you know, gracing us with her presence, looking fabulous, taking notes. One day we got to see what she's writing down in that notebook.
No, it's my notebook.
As you know, one day you're not going to ever share it with us, Natasha?
Absolutely not.
Nope, nothing like that. When are you going to be ready to sing some notes for us? When are you going to be ready to sing for us?
Sing?
Sing. Uh-oh.
One day, maybe on Christmas.
Next Christmas?
I'll learn a song.
You'll learn a Christmas song?
Yes.
Okay, you know what? I will remember that. Magic Man, thanks for being behind the glass, making things happen. My name is Mac Newton. Some people call me the Mac Daddy. I particularly don't care as long as you don't call me late for a meal. This has been Turning Point, our musical guest host. Glad you all around. We'll see you next week. 3, 2, 1. Peace. The Mac Daddy is out.